quite a lot, like little spaces for breaks and brought some refreshments. And
really that long?
What?
Really that long?
Could be, I don't know. First of all, the first thing that strikes one is that we know that Chazal were clear that Pesach is called Zman Cheruseinu. And this is a question we've asked many times before, that we know that on the other hand, Chazal always tells us that Ein Lecha Ben Chorin Ela Misha Ozig B'Torah, that there is no real freedom except through a Kabbalah HaTorah, which really comes much later. So why is it that we should stress the Zman Cheruseinu in terms of Pesach? But another very, very disturbing aspect of Pesach is the historical historical perspective in which we have to see Pesach, namely that Pesach collapsed within a month after it happened. Because here what happened was that Hashem takes them out and he shows them these tremendous nisim and niflos, and these nisim and niflos are supposed to be the basis of an emuna that is going to, it says, Gam b'choya aminu li'olam, and Hashem promises Moshe Rabbeinu that from, you know, they're going to trust you from now on after they see this, and it's supposed to lead to this this permanent ummah and mamlachas kohanim and so on. And instead, within a month, they're already asking Ayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu imayin. They're nichshal with the berfidim, and Mamela Amole comes. They make the egel. They send the meraglim. They do everything wrong that they could possibly have done, until Hashem finally gets fed up with them. He says, never mind, I'm not taking them into Eretz Yisrael after all. So, I mean, if Lamaisa, Pesach has in it what is supposed to be the power for us and our future and our current freedom, how is it that even at the time that it happened, it wasn't powerful enough to last 1 month? I mean, I think that that is a very, very strong question. You can't talk about a particular historical happening being the source of everything to come if it couldn't even provide sufficient control for a period of a few weeks after it happened. And yet we're talking all the time, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hoceichem Eretz Mitzrayim. Even the Luchos begin, our Dveikus Hashem begins with Anochi Hashem Elokecha, specifically in the sense of his having taken us out of Eretz Mitzrayim. Everything that we do, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, this seems to be the basis of many of our beliefs. And it wasn't enough to provide a basis of belief for even shortly thereafter. Now, I assume that one would expect the approach to Pesach and the understanding of Pesach to come from the Haggadah. And I'm sure by now many of you have noticed that the Haggadah seems to be something of a Sefer HaSosum, something of a sealed book, in that it doesn't really give many answers, or at least it doesn't appear to give many answers. And what's worse, a cursory examination of the Haggadah appears to show something that is totally disorganized and out of any kind of meaningful continuous approach to things. Doesn't seem to be any goal to what the Haggadah is doing. And so I'll once again review briefly with you the major points in the Haggadah and stress that the Haggadah is supposed to be so organized that this is the one thing that we do in our various Yomim Tovim that is called specifically a Seder. And a Seder means an organization. So you'd think that the Haggadah would be even symbolic of how well organized something could be. And yet, in a review of the Haggadah, it appears to be thoroughly disorganized. For instance, it starts essentially Manishtana Alayla Zemikol Alaylas. And we never bother answering the questions of Manishtana Alayla Zemikol Alaylas, because, I mean, first of all, we ask right away that we're not, how come we're matfil now, shtepam, and what are we doing being matfil? And, of course, the answer to that is we're being matfil so that you should ask questions about why we're being matfil, and that would, we don't want to tell them that because that would turn them off, so we never answer that question. But in general, we don't address ourselves to saying particularly why it is that we do this and why it is that we do that. Not only that, but even the chiyuv of those particular items of the Haggadah, such as why are we eating a korban pesach, why are we eating matzah, why are we, seem to be almost an afterthought to the Haggadah. After we finish talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim, the whole Haggadah, we say, oh, by the way, koshel ayam shloshet dvarim alohu, ha'elu, if we don't say these three things, lo yatzi dechavosa, pesach matzah mar, okay, we better say them, so we say them, that's it, stop eating. So,
although eating is very important for Pesach, but it's
preparing. So it doesn't make sense to begin something that you're not going to end. You're asking questions that you don't really intend to answer. It's somewhat frustrating. Then we go ahead and we start off with the answer. You'll notice in some of your agudas, it's got, especially the English one, it's got a big osios. It says the answer. Everyone knows that, the answer. The answer, of course, never appears. As soon as we start saying, "I want to, you know, the problem that's right," and we get all excited about saying that Hashem took us out of there. And if he hadn't taken us out of there, we still would have been Avon of the Parliament of Mitzrayim. And then you should know, it's really great to be talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim. And at that point, we stop talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim and get into a lot of these Hasidish Maisim over here about Arani Kiben Shivim Shono. And everybody starts talking about how he got gray hairs overnight. Not that that seems to have very much to do with Pesach, but there's a vort to say over, so somehow that's one Gemara that everybody knows. And then we talk about sitting around in Bnei Brak, which also doesn't seem to be very negiah. We get completely sidetracked right off the bat, the beginning of that God. Then, apparently, when they were writing that God, they forgot that we got sidetracked, so they thought that they had already talked about Yetzias Mitzrayim and all of these things. So they start saying hallo, with Baruch Amokah and Baruch Hu, and everybody gets all excited. Then somebody thought that they forgot to talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, so they decided they're going to start over again. So then they bring down the questions again. Well, there's really four children, and they ask kind of questions, so they say over the question, Ma'ayit is Afrod Ramishpotim, and Ma'ayit is Eslachem, Ma'azeis. And then, so Mimela, we finally are about ready to get back into Yetzias Mitzrayim again, because we started over. When it occurs to somebody that maybe the mitzvah is not even tonight, maybe we should have started this a month ago, which is a fine time to start wondering about Yochel Meresh Kredesh. Maybe the mitzvah began really 2 weeks ago, and here we invade Menish for 2 weeks, we've forgotten to do our chiyuv. So we have to go through a whole drush, and no, don't worry about it. Tonight's the night, Babur Zeh, and Bizmancheh, Matzimor Menachem Lepanacha. So, Mamela, now we can finally get started again. You'd think that by this time we'd be sufficiently excited to discuss Yetzias Mitzrayim? No. Suddenly it occurs to someone that really we ought to pay some attention to our great, 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 great forefathers. Why should we only start with the Jews? We ought to include some Goyim in this. So, Mamela, we start talking about Terach, Avi Avram, which really has nothing to do with anything. But then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Makarav HaSlavadosai. And it says, Yaakov Avon of Yordu Mitzrayim. So, again, before we talk about that we ever got out of Mitzrayim, right away we start celebrating. Oh, Baruch Shem Rav Tachos of Yisrael. Baruch Shem Rav Tachos of Yisrael, Baruch Baruch Kishav as Hakeits, and he promised us, Gamma Segoya Shayavod Adonanoch. It doesn't say anything yet about the Yitzir. There was no Yitzir. But anyway, everybody's very happy, and they're getting to this hollow kind of mood again. And so they stand up, many people have been able to stand up here, I don't know if you all do, but many people stand up at this point and say, V'hi shom dola v'seinu v'lonu. Some people sit down and say, V'hi shom dola v'seinu v'lonu. But everybody says, V'hi shom dola v'seinu v'lonu. Which, as I pointed out before, sounds like a very modernistic approach to the Agada, because it doesn't really have anything to do, I mean, you haven't even discussed the fact that it was Eimei Yetzias Mitzrayim that's up top of it. And suddenly you want to prove to your audience that the Agada is a very relevant thing. So you start talking about the Jews in Russia and the Holocaust centers and so on and so forth. So, okay, but anyway, after having gotten carried away on that, I think we pick up the wine. Many people pick up the wine at that point, so maybe that's the excuse. You know, it's getting late. So, again, we forget about Yetzias Mitzrayim. We say we should take a good example. The best example ought to be Yerides Mitzrayim and all of the needs that happened by Mitzrayim, because that's, after all, what we're talking about. No, a good example would be somebody who's even worse than Paro. Lavan Arami. Is that a good example? After all, he wanted to kill everybody. The fact that everybody was only one person, that doesn't matter. He wanted to kill everybody, because if he would have killed that one person, he would have killed everybody. So maybe we bring that as an example of V'yish Amdala V'yishen V'lanu. It's also rather far-fetched. And besides that, how can you say Baruch Shem Rav Tachos Yisrael That was before Yetzias Mitzrayim. You can't say Yish Amdalav Yitzhak Avalanu, where even in the first place there hadn't been the Yetzias yet to call it to Yisham. Very modern. And then, so once we're talking about Lavan, we say Tseil Mat, we have to learn a good example. So learn from Lavan Arami. And then we start talking about Arami Oved Avi. And here comes the shocking part, which hopefully most of you have realized by now. The shocking part is that from this point on, we never talk about anything else. Because once we start on the parsh of Arami Oved Avi, Vayered Mitzrayim, Vayogar Shem, and Psemot, that's what we do for the rest of the Agoda, until we finish the Agoda. Except for the afterthought about it's a good idea to say Pesach Matzimora before we forget. Right? So we spend the next 10 pages of the Agoda discussing Arami Oved Avi, which all started with Big Mapi Kesh Lovin Arami Lazarus Liakov Aminu. And again, we avoid all of the wonderful parshas in the Torah that concern themselves with Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we go talk about Parshas Kisavai that discusses what you do after you come to Eretz Yisrael and you have to bring Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash. So it says that you should go in, you should tell the Kohen, yeah, I'm really happy to be here in Eretz Yisrael, and Arami Ovid Ovi, Vayered Mitzrayim, Yogar Shem Tzimadri, and so on and so forth. And you give him the peros, and he accepts them, brings them up to Mizbeach, very nice. But it doesn't seem to be the right thing to be doing on Pesach. That's sort of a Shavuos kind of thing. That's the time that you start bringing Bikurim, which is another maybe connection to the Kabbalah Satorah, which seems to be Shavuos, not here. So you can see that things seem to have gotten out of hand on this Haggadah. And then after we... after we do this, and we remember to say Pesach Matzimor, we point out that in every generation we have to see ourselves as having come out of Mitzrayim, and maybe we should be very happy, so we start to sing, and we say the Hallel, and then we sing these silly songs about Dayenu, why in the world anybody should say Dayenu, I mean, what, it's enough for us, I mean, we're sitting here celebrating all of these Nisim, we're saying it would have been enough if we wouldn't have these Nisim. That's a little bit funny. What's even worse is after we eat the meal, we go back to singing absolutely insane songs, you know, about sticks and fires and little kids and things like that, which don't, mamash, have nothing to do with Pesach at all. But we talk about all kinds of things that happen in the middle of the night, as if that's what's essential to remember about Pesach, it happened in the middle of the night. And it's a day where if Seder is the most important thing, it seems to be a day where Seder has been totally and absolutely ignored. This is what happens in the Haggadah. So, once again to remind you, it's clear that these things are not coincidental, because if one takes a look in the Gemara in Pesachim, Gemara says Beferish, first it says that there's the chiyuv to the child to ask Manishtana, and it says, what do you do in the Haggadah? Well, Matzah Bignus, Messiah Bishvach, you have to first say something that was bad. Then you say something that's good. And then Dorish Mi'arami Ovid Avi Achig Merkola Parsha. Then you have to read Arami Ovid Avi. You see that the Mishnah is defining the Chiyav of Haggadah as the Chiyav of reading Arami Ovid Avi till its end. So even though when you read the Haggadah, it seems to just be an aside, that is to say, Tzeil Amad Ma Bikesh Lovan Arami, and I'll bring you an example, it's sort of a sneaky way of getting into a whole new sugya. In essence, that sugya is really what the Haggadah is all about, according to the Mishnah. What does Masra Bignus Messiah Bishvach mean? Says the Gemara, my Bignus, what does it mean to start off Bignus? So Rav Amar, Mitzkila Evde Avedis Gilulim Ayavisinu. Rav says that means that you should say Mitzkila Evde Avedis Ayavisinu. And Shmuel says it means that you should say Avon Aminu Lefar Avim Mitzrayim. So, you see that all of the elements of our Haggadah are specified by the Mishnah. They're not just things that people picked out of a hat. The Mishnah is telling us, and with the Gemara's Machlekes Rav Shmuel, that it's an absolute chiyuv to start off saying one or the other of these things. So therefore the chiyuvim are, first of all, the child has to ask, Kana ben Shelitz Aviv. Second of all, you have to be Maskel B'nus B'Sayim B'Shvah. And you have to darshan Arami Ovid Avi. And of course, the next Mishnah discusses the chiyuv of saying the Hallel. So that we pointed out that in essence, you have over here really two separate Haggadahs which incorporate these two inyonim. You have, first of all, the questions of Amanishtana, which are questions, Kana ben Shoelis Aviv. Then you have Avonim Ayinu L'Paro B'Mitzrayim, which is Masr B'Gnuz. And then you say, and that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out, is Messiah B'Shvav. Then you say, Baruch HaMokum Baruch Hu, which is a Hallel. Then you say four questions again, because you have four Bonim. And then you say, again, Mitchilo Evdi Avedizor HaYo Avedizenu, which was Rav's Pshat, in what you're supposed to say. And then you say Hallel, and together with the, you also say Baruch HaMokum again, because you have the Baruch Shem Avtachase, which is the two Agodas. You have Shmuel's Agoda and Rav's Agoda, and then you dash in Rami Ovid Ovi to be Yotzi with both of them. And the Rami Ovid Ovi may be very deeply connected, because there's only two places in the entire Torah where there is a chiyuv to announce what you're doing before you do it. And that is the Haggadah Shel Pesach, because it says, V'higadot Levincha, so you're supposed to tell them, what is it that I'm doing? This is what I'm doing. There's one other place. You're supposed to walk into the Beis HaMikdash with your first fruits, and you're supposed to say, He got it the Ayom LaShem Elokecha, Kibasi El Haaretz. The same word, Haggadah. Furthermore, it even says, V'yonisa V'yomarta. There's only one other place where we find that kind of thing. That is matzah. It's called Lechem Oni, V'yonisa. So the response of V'yonisa V'yomarta, He got it the Ayom LaShem Elokecha, to Lechem Oni and the Chiyuv of Haggadah seem to be interwound. And it makes sense that we should have the Chiyuv of Pesach somehow Nogea, at least we see the Pasuk is telling us that it's somehow Nogea the Chiyuv of Bikurim. How? We haven't explained yet. Then, of course, one has to ask why specifically Bikurim? And what involves Bikurim with the parshias over here in the Haggadah? And it's interesting that this may be able to explain to us this funny interlude of Yochel Mirosh Chodesh, which we didn't really talk about. Because Yochel Mirosh Chodesh, as we've explained many times, is the fact that the original Yetziah from Eretz Mitzrayim begins with the first mitzvah that Klal Yisrael is given, namely Achodesh Hazelachem Rosh Chodeshim. And that mitzvah apparently is essential for their ability to be masik cheres, for them to have any kind of concept of what freedom is. And we explain that this is so because what Achodesh Hazelachem means is that you must be prepared to recognize that you're going to begin something new. And this is beginning of a new minyan where everything in the past is no longer nogea. And that's why every month we consider it to be a Kabbalah Espanei Hashchina. We go out and we're Mekadesh the Chodesh, at least when Beis Din was there, we were Mamish Mekadesh it. And now, L'Zecher that, we go out and we're Mekabel Pnei Hashchina, because the ability to see things afresh without being involved in how it was that you did it until now, which always has to be an element of selfishness and seeing things because you once saw it that way, you want to continue seeing it that way. Without that, freedom is impossible. We'll talk about this a little bit more later. And this is why we find the concept of newness and freshness so involved in Pesach, beginning with Achodesh Hazelachem. But immediately after, the first day after, the second day of Yontov, which used to be the first day after Yontov, Chol HaMoed, what do? We bring the Omer, which is Matir Chodesh, Biachila. It allows us to eat new things. And then we count 50 days, and we bring Shtei Alechem, which allows us to bring Chodesh to the Mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash. So again, Chodesh, which by the way connects to Shavuos and Pesach once again. And really, Chazal say that they're actually all one Yontif. That's why Chazal always called them Atzeres, because at Shavuos is to Pesach, what Shmini Atzeres is to Sukkos. They're really connected. One is the culmination of the other, so to speak. And furthermore, we find that right away the Torah is mitzavas in a chiyuv of Bechor. What is Bechor? The first child that you have. The Bikurim, which is involved in Shavuos, and obviously relates directly to the Bnei Bechor Yisrael, the first ones. And this is the whole reason for the creation of the world, which itself revolves around Yetzias Mitzrayim. As we said, the first Rashi in Chumash says that the Torah should only have begun from Achodesh Hazelachem, but it really starts from before in order to teach us about Yerusha Sa'oretz, and that's Bereishis. That Bereishis is Bishvil Yisrael, Shenikra Reishis. So again, even Klal Yisrael itself, besides being called Bechor, is called the first. And the Gra says that even the first word in the Torah, Bereishis, is Merames to Pidyon Bechoris, because Beis Reish Aleph Shin Yud Tov stands for Ben Rishon after Shloshim Yom Tifteh, which is the Chiyuv of Pidyon Bechoris. So it makes sense that in order for us to appreciate the ability to go free, maybe that's how it relates to Bikurim. That is, that we have to be able to break away from that which we once saw in order really to be free. The Shaila is, why should still, and there's many different aspects of the, you could read the Tzivui of Bechor to get involved in Chodesh instead of reading Bikurim, which is involved later on after you come to Eretz Yisrael. Bechor was no gay immediately. You could read HaKodesh as Elohim for all of the matters in the Haggadah. Why choose Bikurim? So for this, we said that we have to examine the parasha where HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes, Moshe comes to Hashem after having been sent to Mitzrayim and having a fiasco, because instead of things getting better, things got much worse. So Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Hashem and he complains and says, why did you send me? Things have gotten much worse since you sent me. So Hashem tells him that Moshe, you're making a very foolish mistake. And he it says, Vayidaber Elokim al Moshe, he uses a lashon of Elokim, which means a dying, because he was angry at him that he should speak so foolishly. So Rashi explains, Vayomer alav, Ani Hashem, v'lo lechinam shalachticha, I didn't send you for nothing. I sent you for a very important purpose, which is, ki im lekayem devarai shedibarti loves harishenim. I sent you in order that I should be able to be mekayem what I promised to do to the others. And that's why he says, Ani Hashem. Because, he continues, ve'eru al Abram al Yitzchak v'Yaakov v'kel shakoy, u'shmi Hashem le'nedat lehem. I never let them know what it means to have a Shem Hashem. What does that mean? Shmi Hashem le'nedati lehem. Rashi explains, it's not that they didn't know the word Hashem, but they did not, they weren't makir the midah of Hashem, which is lo nikarti lehem b'midah amitis sheli, she'aleha nikra shmi Hashem. They didn't see me as a reliable person, as one who does what he says he's going to do. She'arei hivtachtim lo kiyamti. Promised them that I would do things, and I never kept my promises. So Mamela, they don't know me. The Gamaki Mosi as Brisi Tomla Seslim is Eretz Canaan. I promised them I was going to give them Eretz Canaan. And Rashi says that each time I said Bekel Shakai, I made a Brits, and I promised Eretz Canaan. To Avram I promised it, Beparshas Mila, to Yitzchak I promised it, Kilachola Zara thought, to Yaakov I promised it, Ani Kel Shakai, Prey Revei, and so on. And so therefore, Hareshin Adati Amalokiyamti. You see, I swore, and I didn't keep what I swore. Therefore, I have no choice but to take them out of Mitzrayim. So don't be foolish. If I sent you down there, it's for a very important purpose, and you don't have to come back and complain. I know what I'm doing. The very next pasuk contradicts all of this. Because the very next pasuk says, V'gam ani shamati es nakaz bnei Yisrael Hashem Mitzrayim avidim osam. Besides that, I heard that Klal Yisrael was very broken, and they were crying from the Aveda that Paro was working with them. And the Maisa, we bring in the Haggadah itself, and originally before this parsha, when for the first time Hashem responds to the Shibut, it doesn't mention anything about the fact that he even tells Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, Vayomer Hashem, after Moshe turns aside and he sees the bush burning. So Hashem tells him, Moshe, Ro ra'isi es oni ami Hashem b'Mitzrayim. I see how miserable my people are in Egypt. V'tzakosem shamati mipnei noksof. And I hear them crying out because of those who are oppressing them. Ki yadati es machovav. I know how much they hurt. V'rei latzilo miyad Mitzrayim. I've come to take them out, to save them, to take them out from that land, to bring them el eretz tova, rechava, el eretz zavas, chalav v'dvash, and so on. And now he says, hinei tzakas bnei Yisrael bo'elai, I hear their cries, I see what Mitzrayim is doing, go, I'm sending you to Paro to take them out. Does he say a word about Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov? Does he say anything about the chiyuv? Does he say anything about the haftocha? No. All he talks about is the fact that I'm very upset about what's happening to Klal Yisrael. Now, when Moshe Rabbeinu comes back and is complaining, suddenly he remembers the bris to the ovis. And even after he talks about the bris to the ovis, he says, and I also heard that they were crying. I mean, which one was it? Is it a reaction to the crying, or is it a bris to the ovis? So what we have to say is that essentially both things are negea here. In other words, he's telling them that, okay, I'm involved and I care about them, and the reason that I care about them, and you can rely on my caring about them, you can rely on my involvement with them, is because it's predicated on going into Eretz Yisrael. And since I promised them, promised the others, I must bring them into Eretz Yisrael, Mamela, you can rely on the care that I have for them. It's not something that I can forget. So really, what is the haftacha, what is the basis of our relationship? The fact that Hashem promised Eretz Yisrael and has never kept his promise of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore he has to go ahead and take us into Eretz Yisrael in order to show the Avos that he's a reliable individual. And that when he says something, he keeps it. Which explains already that first Rashi and Chumash. Because Rashi says, although the Torah should have begun with Achodesh HaZelachem, which is Yitzias Mitzrayim, it has to begin with Bereishis Bore Elohim, because that's the only way I know that the Jews have a right to Eretz Yisrael, says Rashi. Because what will be if the Goyim will come along one day and they'll tell the Jews, you're a bunch of Ganovim, because you took Eretz Yisrael without permission. So then, Klal Yisrael should be able to say to them, that's not true. Because since Hashem created the world, it's up to him to give it to whomever he wants. So he says, I'll read the Rashi to you. Shim Yomru, Uma Yisraelim Yisrael, Listim Atem. You're a bunch of robbers. You took over countries that don't belong to you. So then what do they answer? He created the earth, and he gave it to whomever he wishes. So you see that even the very beginning of the Torah, all the way through till Yetzias Mitzrayim, begins because of one thing. The rights to express the rights that we have to come into Eretz Yisrael. And without that, we wouldn't have needed to know anything except for HaKadosh HaZalachem, and from that point on. That's rather amazing. By the way, you recognize that this is something that has happened in our days, and still is happening. And that's what they're yelling at us all the time. Palestinian rights. You're Ganovim. You went and you were Kavesh land from other people. And to the point where it's literally Nagea the Kiyam of Klal Yisrael right now. It's Nakuda. That the Goyim are tining this. And where did it... I've said it so many times, I'm embarrassed to repeat it, but it's amazed by it. What?
You can't answer
back. We do answer them back with that. What are you talking about, we can't? We do.
Do they accept?
I mean, we can't. Every time they say it in the United Nations, the ambassador gets up and says that it's our promised land, and Hashem said he gives it to us. And that happened again and again. You have to realize that for thousands of years, people read this Rashi. A thousand years, people read this Rashi and scratched their heads and says, come on, where are the Goyim going to... First of all, Goyim don't talk. What do you mean if the Goyim will talk? People talk. Goyim don't talk. Nations don't talk. And where are you going to have an opportunity to answer the nations? Well, it's crazy. All of a sudden, 1,000 years later, they make this organization where all the Goyim can talk, right? And all the Goyim get up and they start yelling and they say, your Jews are a bunch of Ganovim because you took the lands that don't belong to you. I'm straight out of Rashi. I saw with my own eyes the Israeli ambassador get up and say, no, Hashem promised it to us. I mean, it's like even those who refuse to admit that there's a God, they managed to get into the Declaration of Independence, the Israeli Declaration of Independence, that, you know, it's the land that was promised. They didn't say who promised it, but it was promised. So, I mean, it's clear that's our insistence that it's our land, is that it was the land that God gave to us. If I care, one of the Arab ambassadors even got up in the UN and said that you can't dine at that anymore, because I know that they sell not kosher meat there, and No, you guys don't keep mitzvahs, you don't keep Shabbos, so all of a sudden now you're worried about the Torah and that it gives it to him. It's Mashiach that he really gave it to them. Good. During the 6 day war, it's happened. So I'm almost despoiled from this Rashi because it came so alive, like in our time. Spelled it. Take a look at the end of the Torah, and you see that even the end of the Torah revolves around this. Because it says that after Moshe Rabbeinu gives his brachas to all of Klal Yisrael, so it says, Vayah, Hashem tells him, you have to come up to the mountain and I'll show you Eretz Yisrael. Mamash can't stop. What is it? Huh? Vayal Moshe Mi'arva Yismaya Valhar Nevo. And just that Moshe went up, and it says he was so alive and so awake that he bounded up in one step, even though he was going to his death. Rosh HaPisgah Shal Pnei Yerecha. Vayar Eyu Hashem Eskola Eretz Yisagilot Adon. Hashem showed him the entire Eretz Yisrael. He showed him everything, and Rashi says that it's a remez here, ad hayom acharon. He showed him everything till the end of time, till the last day of history. So Hashem tells him, this is the land that I swore to give to Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. Saying that I'm going to give this land to your children. Here I show it to you with your own eyes, but you won't go there. And we ask, this is such a rotten thing to say. I mean, here this man has sat and he's prayed hundreds of tefillahs. He's begging Hashem, let me come into Eretz Yisrael. So what does Hashem do? He says, come here, I want to show you something. Brings him up, shows him Eretz Yisrael and says, see it? you can't go in. What's going on? I mean, why should he do such a thing? That's where Moshe Rabbeinu died. After this, that he shows him Eretz Yisrael, as if to rub it in that he'll never be zochet to go into Eretz Yisrael. So Rashi explains that what does it mean? Leimor lezaracha atnena. Leimor means I want you to go and say, I'm showing it to you, Erisircha Leimor. I'm showing it to you that you should say to them, Kidei Shetelech Betomar L'Avram Yitzchak L'Yaakov. I want you to tell Avram Yitzchak L'Yaakov after you leave this world. Shvua Shenishbalachem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kima. Remember that promise Hashem promised you? He kept his promise. I saw they were standing right by the boundary. L'Kach Erisircha. That's why I want you to see it. But unfortunately you won't be able to go there. And he's trying to, why is he saying that? Because he wants to tell him, if not that I had this zera, I would have liked you to remain alive till you could have seen them inside Eretz Yisrael, nitu'im u'kvu'im, permanently implanted there. And then you should die to be able to go tell him. Right? But as soon as Moshe Rabbeinu is in a position where he's able to report back to Avram Yitzchak V'Yaakov that he's going to get Eretz Yisrael, that Klal Yisrael got Eretz Yisrael, the moment that he's in that position, he dies. And that's the end of the Torah. That's the last psukim of the Torah. That's it. The end of the story. So you see that the Torah begins with the information required for Yerusha Saharetz. Yetzias Mitzrayim comes along, where Hashem is laughing at Moshe, saying, what's wrong with you? And he said, the whole purpose of everything was for this moment. You're telling me that I'm going to change my mind, I'm not going to take them out. What's you're crazy. And the moment that Moshe Rabbeinu is able to go and answer and tell them, Shmur Shadishbalakam Kima, that Shmi Hashem Shalaynaidati Lahem, they suddenly, then now they'll be able to know, after all of these years, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu keeps his promises. So that, then he comes and he dies, and that's the end of the Torah. So it comes out that the whole Chamisha Chumshei Torah are basically there for one purpose only. To show us that we have a right to Eretz Yisrael, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised us Eretz Yisrael, and that he keeps his promises. And that's what Chamisha Chumshei Torah are about. It's quite an amazing thing. So Mamela, when we say V'hisha Amdo L'Avasenu V'lanu, we're not talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim. We're talking about much more than that. What we're saying is that the whole function of the Bria, from Bereshis, which refers to Yisrael Shenikru Reshis, from the fact that we have a right to Eretz Yisrael, all the way through till the end, is only there for one purpose. So that's the V'yishav V'laviseinu V'lanu that we're saying at this point. Which means that in essence, the Haggadah is not a work that is there to discuss Yetzias Mitzrayim. It is rather the culmination of a process which leads to Emuna. Namely, it's the story of the fact that Hashem keeps promises. So that, and that's why we know that Emuna is the central item of Pesach. Hashem keeps telling Moshe Rabbeinu, this is where they're going to learn their Emuna from. Matzah is called in the Zohar, Lechem Nama de Mamnusa. It's bread of Emuna. Because what it's trying to show us is that there's somebody to rely on. Is that Hashem really does keep his promises. And so Memela, if that is the essential function of the Haggadah, is bringing out the meaning of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the way that Hashem brought it out to Moshe Rabbeinu, that this is part of a process that is an absolute chiyuv in the Bria to be, and this is the whole meaning of everything. So therefore it would make sense that what we talk about are not things that are specifically related to a Yetzias Mitzrayim kind of approach, but rather to the ultimate of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Antocha, and the fact that he keeps that, and that's why he was Shomer Yaakov by Lavan, because ultimately he had to bring him down to Eretz Mitzrayim so that he should be able to bring him to... That's why the whole parsha of the Haggadah is in terms of Bikurim, because what is Bikurim? It's that when I come into Eretz Yisrael, I can say, oh, give me the parsha of Bikurim. When I come into Eretz Yisrael, I want to say exactly this, that he got it to Yayom, L'Hashem Elokecho. Just want to read it inside. V'ya kisavo el ha'aretz asher Hashem Elokecho nosein lecha l'nachlo. When you get into the land that Hashem gives you, v'lokachem reishis kol pri ha'adam, you should take the first of your things. V'alach el ha'mokoyim, you should go to the place that Hashem chooses. U'vos el ha'kohen, and you should come to the kohen, and you should say, Gamar to'elo. He got it the ayom l'Hashem Elokecho. I want to announce today, publicly, to Hashem, Ki bosi al haaretz asher nishba Hashem l'avoseinu l'asei shalom, that I have indeed arrived in the place that he promised to bring us to. You see, it's meiridik. The whole inyan of the Bikurim is the final kiyum of the Haftacha. So that what we darshan in Arami Ovid Avi is essentially what Yetzias Mitzrayim is all about. Not the actual Yetzia, but rather the Yetzia in order to be Nichnas Eretz Yisrael. And that is the most essential item that's involved. So this explains already why, how it is that we get into the aspect of Bikurim, literally. Alright, so again, this is all past history, and this is all just an introduction to the Shir. That the Haggadah Shel Pesach is essentially a story of Emunah, that is, of reliability. And that, therefore, it essentially revolves around the Knesa to Eretz Yisrael, which is why Dayenu goes all the way up to there. Not just the actual Yetzia from Eretz Mitzrayim. Although there are specific things that are Negea, only Yetzia and Mitzrayim, which we'll discuss later on. And that, therefore, when we talk about a broad historical perspective of Mitzilah of the Avodah Zorah, Yo Avosenu, that our forefathers were of the Avodah Zorah, now HaKadosh Baruch Hu has taken us to him, and so on. We talk about love and Arami. These things have to all be seen within the context of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's keeping his promise, which really begins with the Bria itself, which is the Bereshis, that there's a point in all of this. If you look through the Haggadah itself, and that's even stressed in how we go to it. Vayomri Yoshua kol ha'am, komar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, beivra nar Yoshua v'seichem, vekachas avichem es avram eivra nar, olachas over etzkinan, arpa es zaro, etein li esav es har soyer, l'resh es al etzian dev esav, v'yakob avon of yordu mitzrayim. And this is where we say Baruch Shem Haftachos in Yisrael, because it's at that point that we're nispoil. Eat that level of history that brought us down to Mitzrayim in order for us to become there, a nation, is itself that which we say Baruch Shem Haftachos Yisrael. We view it as part of a historical process that is essential in the Bria, And Mamela, that gives it its importance, its reliability, its meaning. And it transcends our own specific relationships that we develop within the context of being members of Klal Yisrael. And this explains also why we have a very special mitzvah on this yontif. We don't have on any other yontif. And that is that it says, Chayav Adam Liros Tzatz Mekilu Hu Yatz Mitzvah. We don't find that by any other yontif. We know that every yontif is supposed to be a renewal of whatever it was that we got at that particular time. So in Shavuos we talk about the renewal of our ability to relate to the Torah. And on Hanukkah, the renewal of our ability to be Moser Nefesh, and so on and so forth. In Pesach, we don't talk about that. Pesach, it's not a renewal. In Pesach, we have an actual reliving. A man has to see himself as if he left Mitzrayim. So what that means is that whatever happened on Pesach is not a question of it's happening once, and therefore now that it happened that time, I can be zocha to it today. That's true of all of other Yomim Tov. On Shavuos they were mekabel Torah, because they were mekabel Torah, mamela I have a shayachus to kabbalas Torah today. And I already have the Torah. I don't have to read mekabel Torah. I can access that Kabbalah particularly well on Shavuos. It's a day to relate better to the fact that I was already mekabel Torah. But I don't have to redo it. On Pesach, I actually have to redo it. It's a completely different type of Aveda. What it means is, and this is how we begin, that Ilo Tzionu Hashem Mitzrayim, Arayonu Vanenu Vnei Vanenu Mishubadim Aninu Lefarwa Mitzrayim. That is to say, what I'm saying is that I must feel and react as if my very freedom today is specifically dependent on my ongoing recognition of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's not something that happened in Mamela, I was free. But I have to see myself, Ki'ilu, I was Yotze Misham, because without my own accessing Yetzias Mitzrayim, I lose my freedom. You see how different that is than any other yontif? Because of that, we do different things on Pesach than we do on any other yontif. First of all, the very fact that we make the kids ask questions, that the Torah revolves around answers to questions. What does that mean? It means that we're trying to get them to feel different. Not true of any other yontif. We want them to ask, Ma nishtana? We want them to ask, what has changed? What is different? To be able to, the Rambam says, throw popcorn over the table. So they'll ask, what are you throwing popcorn around the table for? Is that negei pesach? It's not negei pesach. But lamaisa, they're ready to recognize from that something must be tremendously different. People throwing popcorn around the table. Right? Or you grab the matzahs one from another, which is our minig of stealing the afikoman. You do crazy things. Now, these things don't have anything to do with Pesach. But nonetheless, they make the kids recognize that something is different. So, mainly they ask manishtana. Manishtana is not a question of why is it that we eat matzah, why is it that we throw popcorn, why is it that we're tovel things before the meal. That's not what he's asking. He's asking what has changed that we do these things. Forget about why we do these things. Obviously, you're doing things because things are different. Maybe you're throwing popcorn to prove to me that things are different. I don't care why I adopted a popcorn, but I want to know why do you feel that things have changed? And this is exactly what we're telling them. They've changed. Today is tak a different day than any other day. It's different than any other yontif. Because today is the one time where you have to experience the Yetziyah Mitzrayim. And that's why the only books point this out many times too. The only books that contain pictures for Jews is the Haggadah Shel Pesach. Because since you're Chayav Lirai Tzatz, you have to see yourself as if you went out of Mitzrayim, you have to look into a book and see a picture. As a picture is worth a thousand words, it does something to you. You can relate to it better when there's a picture. So then Klal Yisrael recognizes the minhag of the Sfarim to get up and to walk around as if they're leaving and they're going out of Mitzrayim, and they put a knapsack across their shoulder and walk around with it. These are all things that are intended to specifically create a sensation of actually feeling the fact that we left Mitzrayim. What this means is that in order for us to be free, now, today, at all times, there must be an involvement in Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that involvement consists of three separate ingredients, one of which is Emunah. Apparently, for some reason, without knowing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Neman, and without developing in ourselves the ability of Emunah, of relying, then we can't be free. That doesn't seem to be a very obvious relationship, Emunah to freedom. And furthermore, we have, in a sense, something which is even my ability to be what I want to be, to choose to be what I want to be, to make myself into something. If I don't have, so that's what Emunah is. Emunah means to rely on something that's real, that I can be committed to it, and rely on that commitment as being a meaningful one. Memela, there are no meanings to your choices. If all that I'm going to do is I'm going to say something today, and tomorrow it'll be something else. I'm going to commit myself to relationship today, where there is no reliability in relationships. And Memela, tomorrow I'll have to react differently. Then there's no freedom, because it doesn't really matter what you do. You can choose this or you can choose that. Which is why, just for the philosophers among you, I mean, the biggest fear and absurdity in the absurdities of existentialism is the question of whether you could choose this or you could choose that, and both would be equally good choices. Once you're saying that, then you're by Vedavka saying that there is no freedom. So in trying to establish the freedom of humanity by saying that you have Bechira and whatever your choice is, that gives you the freedom to be whatever you are, quite to the contrary. If there's no difference in what your choice is, you can never have any freedom. Because freedom means the ability to make something, a difference. Everything is the same, then there are no choices. If all choices are equal, that's exactly the same as saying you're in a jail and don't have any choices. Because that really doesn't make any difference at all. On the other hand, a person's tendency is that when having made a commitment and feeling a sense of being able to rely on something, he becomes dependent on his own choice. That is to say, he becomes that which he once was. He needs to continue to provide for his choice that he once made before. This is what the Navi refers to as mitzvah sanashim ilumada. He will constantly look at life in such a fashion as to increase his own sense of security from the choices that he's already made. This type of choice is not freedom anymore, nor is it really emunah, because it's not a belief in something to come. It's a belief in something that was. It's not a commitment to a future and to a change and to a growth. It's a commitment to be what it was that you already are getting comfort out of, and what has already become you. For that, you sacrifice all of your freedom. And therefore, for that, you need the ability to see things anew. Which is why Yochel Mireish Chodesh, the whole union of Chodesh, specifically is Nogea freedom. Without the ability to say, today is not Nogea what happened yesterday, and although I will continue to commit myself to what I had, but only as the basis of what I'm now going to see further, without that you have no freedom, because you have no future. There's no meaning to your choice anymore, because it's all for selfishness. It's not for growing. It's not for being something more, and therefore you lack your freedom. So Mamela, these three inyanim, which the Agoda revolves around, are intimately connected, and in a way they're almost the same thing. They're all different facets of the same diamond. You have your freedom, and that is the knowledge that you have an identity that can choose, and that can develop, and that can be what it wants to be. But that can only be because you know that whenever you've committed yourself to something, there's reliability and meaning in that commitment. And furthermore, that can only be because you're not unable to see things new just because you've already become committed to them. So having all of that, you have freedom. Without that, you don't have freedom at all. This is where we got up to last year. Okay, so this is essentially the Hakdama the introduction to this year's shiur. Now, if you'd like to take a little break and have here, since we started a minute this year of having various points of views, I think that I didn't realize it before. I should have realized that we ought to do the Pesach shiur that way too. So we'll start now the first of a series of shiurim, one of which will be from Avram's point of view, Avram Avinu. After all, there were three people who got that haftarah: Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, right? So we'll have one from Avram Avinu's point of view, one from Yitzchak Avinu's point of view, and one from Yaakov Avinu's point of view.
All tonight?
Okay?
All tonight.
All tonight?
Yeah.
No, we'll start with Avram's. We've pointed out in the past that Pesach revolves very much around speaking. First of all, the mitzvahs halayla revolve around speaking because you have Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, Vigadat Halavimcha, Laman Tesafer, Biosnei Bincha. The word Pesach itself means Pesach, which is a mouth that speaks. We know that they went out from Mitzrayim into a midbar, which means midaber, speaking. The place where they left into the midaber was from a place called Piachiros, which is the mouth of freedom. So it doesn't seem to be any question that when we're dealing with Haggadah, which is speaking too, we're certainly doing something which is essentially very Pesach-dik. Maybe this explains why Moshe Rabbeinu refused to go to take the Jews out of Mitzrayim, because he says, I don't know how to talk. Lo ish dvarim anochi. That relates very well with the old shlichus. Of course, by the time he finishes the midbar training, he learned how to speak because he says Elo advarim, as the Medrash points out, that mitchil lo ish dvarim anochi, and then it says Elo advarim asher diber ish meisha ish elokim. So he changed from a lo ish dvarim to the guy who wrote dvarim. So you see what a little training in the midbar can do for you. Teaches you how to talk. And indeed, the sense of the national development that was reached in terms of Pesach is actually similar to the first glimmerings of identity that a child has when he learns how to speak. Because remember that they were just beginning to sense themselves as being an entity. And it's at that stage that a child really begins to talk. And that's why we find all through the midbar, they are referred to as babies. I need my trusty finish again here. For instance, when they complain, they keep complaining a lot. They say, we need some meat. We're tired of this month. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, I don't understand. He complains to Hashem. He says, I can't take this anymore. Why are you doing this to me, to give me these people? To put all these people on my shoulders. Did I give birth to them? Did I conceive them? Did I give birth to them? That you tell me, carry them around in your lap, like a nursing mother carries around her baby. Bring him into the land where their forefathers were. Where am I supposed to get all this meat from? So Hashem says to them, so really, at this point, what is going on? You think about it, you'll see that what was happening until this point is that they had this tremendous dependency on Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Everything that they need, they come to him. And he, in a sense, is like a nursing mother to them. He just takes care of whatever it is that they feel that they need at that moment. When they actually came to ask for meat, in a sense, it was a stage of growing up. They wanted to be further than Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I don't know how to deal with them on that level. Therefore, Hashem says, okay, I'll tell you what. Take out 70 people. and make them the new leaders, and then they'll be able to have meat. It's true, you can't bring them meat. You have a different type of relationship with them. You're the motherly type. Instead, get the Shivim Ish. So there's two of these men that they refuse to come out. They said, it's not nice for us to get thrown. Moshe Rabbeinu was there. We should be the people that are the Zikanin. So they were Vehemabak Suvim Veloyatsuha Elala. They were the people that refused to come out because they didn't think it was nice. And what happened? The ones that were left in the camp, Vatonach Aleim Aruach, the Ruach Neviyas lands on them also. So what do they say? They say a Neviyas that Yoshua is going to take Klal Yisrael and Teretz Yisrael, not Moshe Rabbeinu, which seems to be curiously related to the fact that they were breaking away from Moshe Rabbeinu at this point and had the Shivim Ish. So Yoshua ben Nun gets very angry, and he says, Moshe, you've got to stop this. So Moshe says, no, the Halavai, they should all be Nevi'im, right? So what? Yeah, I'll bring that out in a moment. So who are these two people that remain in the Machane? One is called Eldad, and one is called Medad, which means to the breast and from the breast, which is exactly the nursing mother syndrome. And Lamaisa, there's only two perfect foods. One of them is milk, mother's milk, which completely supplies all the nutrients the child needs. The other one is the mun. The mun is actually milk, right? Because they had no other needs whatsoever. It had everything that you could possibly need, all of the nutrients. So it was essentially Moshe Rabbeinu acting as a mother. And it was because Moshe Rabbeinu that the mun came. That's why it says Shnei Shadayich Kishnei Ofarim to Ametzviya, that your two breasts are like two Ofarim. It's a type of gazelle, I think it's translated. Anyway, so the Medrash in Shir HaShirim says, who are the two breasts? Moshe v'Aaron, and their merumas in the Aaron that holds that it sticks out like two breasts. And Mamela, they're really the nursemaids, and that's why Yoshua ben Nun says of your Adoni Moshe Kloem, which means, who is Kol Ha'Aim? Who's the only mother around here? Adoni Moshe. So what are they coming to get involved in the middle of something that's not theirs? And that's why when Klal Yisrael wanted the meat, what does it say that they want meat for? Because they say, oi, we remember as HaKishuim, as HaVatichim, as HaChatzir, as HaPsalim, as HaShumim. We remember all those yummy garlics and onions and Chartzilim we had today, his salad, what do you call them, eggplants. And we can now, we don't have anything. All we have is this mun business. So Rashi says, well, what was wrong? So he says, because the mun tasted like everything else under the sun, except for these things. So Rashi says, why is it that it didn't taste like any of these things? Says Rashi, Omer Rabbi Shimon ibn Ma, mun mishtan l'chol davar chutz mi'elo. Why does the mun taste like everything except for garlic and onions and so on? Mibnei shem koshim l'menikos, because they're not good for nursing mothers. Omer l'isha al toch lishum. You tell a woman, don't eat any garlic. Mibnei hatinok, because the kid's going to taste the garlic. So Mamela says, if mother's milk can't taste like garlic and onions, neither could the mun taste like garlic and onions, right? That's why even Chazal point out that ta'amo lishad hashamen. Lishad is a lashon of shadayim. Rashi even brings this over here. That what's lishad hashamen? That it's a lashon of shadayim. That is, that they taste just like a mother's milk tastes like anything that the mother eats. It can be mishapik l'kamatayim. So too, the mun used to taste like whatever it is that people wanted it to taste like, except for these things that weren't good for mother's milk. So you see that they're mamish, they're treated like babies. And Moshe Rabbeinu calls them children. How am I supposed to carry them around like a bunch of children? We see that in the pasuk it's Vayani Keu Dvash Misela. HaKadosh Baruch Hu suckles them with the Dvash Misela. By the way, this is also the Mokar of the Egel. It's Yosvim Hashapor Rotzilinak Hapor Rotzilahonik. And the whole their desire to absorb is symbolized in an Egel, which was supposed to take the place of all that Moshe Rabbeinu absorbed and passes on to them. More than that, this is a pasuk that we even bring in the Haggadah itself, because we say, V'rov, U'darshin, Revova, Ketzemach HaSodah Nisatir. What is this all about? This is a beautiful, beautiful pasuk. It says the parsha begins Umoldosayach b'yom holedes osof, and on your birthday, the day that you were born, the woman that that was taking care of you. Lo charas sharet uvamayim lo ruchatz lemishi. Nobody cut your navel, your umbilical cord. Nobody washed you off. Vum leach lo umlachat vachtel lo chutalt. Nobody sprinkled any powder on you. Nobody diapered you. Lo chos alayech ayin lasos lach achas mi'ela. There wasn't a soul in the world who cared about you on the day that you were born to take care of you. Vatushlachi al pnei asadeh begon afshech. You were lying there on the field. Disgusting. Biyom uledes osof, the day that you were born. Ve'avor alayech, and I, Hashem, came and passed over you. Ve'erech misbosesis b'damayech. I see you lying there in a pool of blood. Vomar lach, and I took you for me, and I said, b'damayech chayit. But I promised you that in this blood you're going to live. And revova kitzemach asod in the satich, that I took you as you started to become matured. Vatirbi v'tigdili v'tavoy v'adiyadoyim. And I raised you, turned you into a princess, gave you beautiful things, until you finally grew up completely. So you see that the remez to Klal Yisrael is a remez of HaKadosh Baruch who's taking them as babies, as infants, literally, and raising them until they grow. So the whole experience of Klal Yisrael is a gentle, slow development from a state of a teenager to the state of an adult. And the mokum that they were in, the matzav that they were in the midbar, was a matzav of a tinok. And even after Kabbalah Zatera, even after Kabbalah Zatera, you see that Chazal called them tinok bereach min beis ha-sefer. They've got to get away from Har Sinai, like a kid who's got to run away from school. They just got ants in their pants. They can't stay around so long learning. It's time to get away from Ben Azmanim or something. So I didn't mean anything by that. So that this, it's interesting, this gets back to the mon, right? Because the mon, this is just an aside, but it leads into something really important, and it's very cute. The mon, they never had to go to the bathroom for, right? So they never had, it says they never had to go outside of the machana. Now, we know that the search here, search for Dibur, to be able to learn how to speak. In Kabbalah, the Golus of Mitzrayim is called the Golus of Das, because the lack of awareness that goes into speaking, to be able to learn how to speak, was essential in order for them to regain Das that had been lost in Mitzrayim. There was a childishness that meant a loss of Das. Okay? The Gemara says that if a child has a dirty diaper, you're still allowed to say Kriya Shema, even though the dirty diaper is there. Although normally you're not allowed to read Kriya Shema around Tzora. Why is this true, says the Gemara? Well, first of all, the Gemara says it's only true until the time that a child can eat a Kizayis B'chdei Achilas Pras. So he has to be able to eat Dagon, which of course relates to the Achilas Matzah and the Achilas from the Eitz Hadas, which was Chita. So that's why, says the Gemara, how do we know? Because there's really nothing wrong with the excrement of an infant. And that's Mamish Keneged the Mon. There's nothing disgusting about the excrement of an infant. Ah, but once they learn how to eat, then it says in the Pasuk, Mosif Das, Mosif Macho. The more Das you have, the more you stink. So Mamela, you're not allowed to say Kriya Shema around, which is the Achila. And the Gemara says, and you see that it's true, because Eina Tinok Yodea Likro Abba Ve'ima, a baby can't call out daddy and mommy until he learns how to eat daga. So you have all of these things that go together over here, right? You have das with dibur, with tinok, with really dependency. And I think that's the key word over here. You have a tinok who has to learn to cry Abba Ve'ima. But crying Abba Ve'ima, which is the first stage of learning how to speak, is in its sense, you can see the relationship to Pesach over here too, which is very child-oriented, of course. you know, all of the mitzvahs are to do to your children, speak to your children, and it revolves around children like no other yontif. I mean, we organize the Seder Hayom around children. We do all of the funny things we do to get the children there, and we change the way that we have the Seder. We run home from shul, so we start early so the kids don't go to sleep. And of course, everybody has the feeling of the sense of the family orientation, which is particularly Pesach. So the whole giving over to a child is specifically Pesach-oriented. So therefore, it's not amazing to find that the Inyan of Tinok would be also exactly what Klal Yisrael was when they were learning how to speak in the Midbar. Now, this all sounds very theoretical to you, but I will explain it so you'll see it as an actuality. The level of their learning how to speak, as I say, is to be Korei Abba V'Ima. And that's exactly what they do. Every time they have a problem, they sit there crying, "Help!" Right? And Moshe Rabbeinu starts davening his fancy tefillahs, and Hashem says, "What's the problem? What are you davening for so much? Just go ahead." They say, "Help! That's enough. Kedai Amuna Sheminu Bi. It's enough that they believe in me. It's okay. They want me to help them. They believe I'm going to help them. Just go, and the sea will split." So this level of crying help all the time, what does it mean? It means that they were in a matzav of tremendous dependency on HaKadosh Baruch. And thinking about it, you will see that in essence, this is the reason why Pesach didn't work. It can't work. Because when a relationship is based on this type of dependency and this type of childish dedication and giving oneself over entirely, which they did to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they went out, they didn't know how they were going to eat, how they were going to survive. Nonetheless, they went out, they followed him, they believed in him. It was a tremendous dedication that they had. A real simple kind of belief that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to save them. And it was that that kept them going. It was that schutz that enabled them to have a Kriyas Yam Suf too. The more you do that type of thing, the more dependent you become. And the more dependent you become, the more fearful you become. First of all, because who knows that I'm doing the right thing in making myself so dependent? What happens if he changes his mind? What happens if he no longer cares as much as he cares? I'm throwing myself into someone else's hands. You're afraid. But more than afraid, you've lost your identity again. So in the very process of learning this das, of learning how to speak, the only thing that you basically learned how to say was Abba V'Ima. All you did was learn to cry out to Hashem, which is the same state of Avdus. So that whereas first they're Avadim Leparo, now it's Li B'nai Yisrael Avadim. Fine. But essentially you still have no identity. And does not this lead directly to everything that happened in the Midbar? What's the first thing that they did? Hayesh Hashem b'kirbeinu imayim. Gee, is he really here? Does he really care? And what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? That's when he sets them down and lets Amalek bite them. That's where Rashi brings the moshul. There was a king who's walking along carrying his kid on his shoulders. Right? And all these animals come along and he beats all the animals up and he saves them, and every time something happens he's always there to save them. All of a sudden the kid taps him on the shoulder and say, "Hey, excuse me, did you see my daddy anywhere?" She says, "You jerk, if you don't know where your daddy is, here, get down on the ground." And the dog comes and bites him. And that's what Amalek was. Amalek was a dog. And they say, "Yayesh Hashem b'kibbeinu imayin." All of a sudden you don't know if I'm here. Good, let's see what happens if I'm not here. Right? And that's what the Mice of Rephidim was. So that, what's the psychology of such a thing? That is the psychology. It's the very fact that you've needed him this whole time to be there to save you, that first of all you wonder, is it real? How much can I rely on it? Surely all of you have experienced this at one point or another. The more you give yourself over to somebody, the more frightened you are that you can't rely on the person that you've given yourself over to. And more than that, the more concerned you are that you don't have anything left for yourself. And so Mamela, it's not just a question of idiotic rebellion. It's a true quest for identity. In taking them out of Mitzrayim the way he did, without any zechuyos, without any preparation, without any real understanding, and bringing them up to some level where Shifcha Layam could see more than Yecheskel ben Buzi, as the Gemara says. Well, what does he expect is going to happen? Obviously, the moment that he lets go, they're just going to go to pieces. They haven't learned to stand on their own two feet yet. He's frightened them out of their wits, essentially. And this is exactly what happened. Where do we see that this is true? Because we find that when Yaakov Avinu was dying, he tells Yosef to do with him chesed v'emes. As Rashi points out over there, that chesed v'emes means a chesed shel emes, a true chesed. What is a true chesed? Burial of a dead man. Because, says Rashi, because when you're burying a dead man, that's the only chesed that shel emes, because what could you get out of burying a dead man? He's dead already. Right? So what is that supposed to mean? I mean, how? That's not true. First of all, there was his brothers. His brothers would have to be makir toiva to him for burying Yaakov. And second of all, I mean, there's so many. Is Yaakov going to be so insulting to Yosef that he's going to tell his own child that, I know the only reason you would bury me is because somebody's going to give you something, so I'm asking you this time to do it for real, doesn't Shalemes? I mean, it's like insinuating that anything that Yosef does is not really Shalemes. I mean, and if Yosef took care of them all of these years in Mitzrayim and gave them everything they needed and helped them out, that's his thanks? But now Yaakov Avinu said, well, do me a real chesed this time. It's disgusting. What do you mean a real chesed? How can you say that? That I've been waiting to get something from you in all of these years that have been mefarnes you and the whole family? But the answer is that there is no such thing as a chesed shel emes, except a chesed that's done with the dead. Why? Because whenever someone does a chesed, they always get something out of it. What's more, is the thing that they get out of it is the very existence of the person that they do the chesed for. Because doing a chesed creates a dependency from the person who received it. And therefore, the chesed per se is not emes. Because in what you're doing for the person, you're hurting the person. You're taking away from that person. It's not the side issues of whether somebody's going to pay you money in the mail that's important. That might be your motivation for doing the chesed, but that wouldn't define the chesed. The definition of chesed shalemes or ena shalemes is much deeper than that. It's whether the act of chesed per se is emes or not. That is to say, did you actually give something or did you end up taking something? And that's why very often people would rather insist that you give somebody, I won't say cigarette anymore, that was in past years I used as a marshal. You will insist that you want to bedavka give somebody a stick of gum rather than allow him to pay you for the stick of gum, right? You don't want to accept the money for the stick of gum. You know why you don't want to accept the money? Not because you're like a cheapskate. There's a much deeper reaction than that. The guy wants to pay you because he doesn't want to be beholden to you. You want him to be beholden to you, so you refuse to accept it. Of course, it's because you're very broad and you're very choshev and don't be silly, what does it matter to me? But deep down, you know that when he accepts the stick of gum, he owes you something. And that's why every time we say thank you in Hebrew, the word that we say for thank you is ani modelecha, which is that I admit to the burden that I have that I really owe you something and that you've given me something and that I'm, it's a tough situation here, right? So that there is no, and that there's nothing you can do. That's a reality. And if I give you something back, we just create a mutual dependence. But the point is, if at some other time I'll give you something back. So it's a mutual dependency. But the dependency is there. So there's always a hodah that's required. By chesed shel emes, the only time it's possible is where you're doing it for someone who cannot owe you anything. And the only one who can't owe you anything is someone who's dead. So memela, the only time we find chesed shel emes is there. So therefore, the same exact thing has to happen in the midbar. If HaKadosh Baruch was going to give them all of these things, and I mean the extent to which he gave them, from nowhere to everywhere, overnight almost, from Memtes Sharei Tuma to be able to see greater things than Nevi'im. So obviously their reaction was to seek identity, to be very much afraid that this wasn't reliable, and they couldn't really be sure that it was going to be this way, and therefore they ran away. They're children after all, they ran away. They weren't prepared for this level. Now, We pointed out before that Hashem, the Davka speaks to Moshe and tells him there are two reasons that I took them out of Eretz Mitzrayim. And this is very important to understand. Because if the only reason I took them out was because I heard their tzaaka, you're absolutely right, Moshe. Then that would mean that they are totally dependent on me. And it all depends on whether I feel this way and I care about them today, and they'll tie them, maybe tomorrow I won't care, which is what you've been tining, Moshe. You've been telling me that maybe now I changed my mind and I didn't take them out, and so you're very upset that I sent you. I want you to understand something, that there is a totally different level to the Yetziah. On the one hand, it's true that I care very much about them. And were the Yetziah to be for this other reason that I have, it would be to them a meaningless Yetziah. If I was only taking them out of Eretz Mitzrayim because I made a promise to somebody hundreds of years before, that is not the Yetziah Mitzrayim that would be Machai of them anything, because it would mean that I don't care about them at all. I'm just doing what I have to do because I owe it, because I promised it. That's not what Yetziah Mitzrayim is about. And that's why I never bothered mentioning this to you. The truth is, Maisha, that Avada, I'm taking them out because I care and I'm responding to their pain. But I want you to understand that I have no choice but to care. They have to rely on me, because the whole point is that this is the test of my reliability. This is the test of my ability to relate to others. And what I'm doing because I have to do it also. It's the care that I have to have, but I have to have it. So they can never, first of all, be afraid that it's going to go, because if it goes, so does my nemunas go. But furthermore, they don't have to be afraid that I'm doing it for them. I'm doing it for them because of a commitment that I have. That makes them far more independent in our relationship. On a national scale, on a cosmic scale, on a historical scale, they've got as much involved here as I have. I mean, we're talking about the whole Bria over here, the whole Bishvil Yisrael Shenikru Reishis. That's not the same level of dependency that you're all nervous about. Now, this is something that, of course, is going to take time for them to recognize. On the level of the Dor HaMidbar, Avada, they were dependent. They were still just beginning to learn the meanings of having a separate national identity. In fact, to them, Lamaisa HaKadosh Baruch Hu came out with this tremendous care and love and devotion, and he scared them away. So now I'm asking you, Akasha, doesn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu also know enough about psychology to figure out that if he does all of these things and he gets them so totally dedicated and they love him like crazy, doesn't he understand that this is going to happen and that Pesach is going to go down the drain within a couple of weeks and they're going to end up with a Molech and with an Egel and with the whole works? So what? Why did he do it? It's he himself caused it. And Moshe Rabbeinu even points it out to him. When they made the Egel Azav, Moshe Rabbeinu says, look, you know what you did? You took a little kid, you put him in the shower, you dressed him up, and you poured Pierre Cardin crap all over him. Pardon me. I hate it. and then you give him a wad of money, and you put him right in front of a whorehouse. And you go away. And you expect him not to be upset, not to go in and to be mizana. And then you're angry at him when he comes out. What are you talking about? How can you do that? And that's why he says, the day's a hub in Dvar. It's your fault. You give them all these things, you load them up, and you expect them to be able to handle it. So it's mamash a result of the things that they were not holding by at that moment, that they went out and were chayte. So it's, you were the one who did it. So why did Itaka do it? What's the reason for such a thing? So the emes is, it's more than just that he did it, Rabbi Yisrael. It's much deeper than that. It's such a beautiful mikud. Even Liyasid Lava, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to build the third Beis HaMikdash, do you know why he comes to build it? Because he says, Zachartu lo chesed niurayich avasku lo isayich lechtech acharai b'midvar be'eretz lo zeruah. That I remember, the reason that I'm coming back to you today is because I remember what it was like when you were young. I remember Chesed Niurayach, when you were little kids, you had such feelings for me. You had such emunah in me. You had so much love and devotion for me. Ahavas Kulay Sayyid. When we were engaged, those kind of feelings, I can't forget them. And every time I think about you, I remember what it was like then. And despite the fact that thousands of years have passed, and you've become very sophisticated, and you've become very mature, and now things are very different, because now you have a Purim already, and you know how to live without my being all so open, and we never really have a chance to make love with each other. But nonetheless, I remember what it was like when we were young. It was very different then. So you see that even we us in love, it's this relationship which is the thing that's machayev. So the pshat is like this. That what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying is that of course, ultimately, a relationship can only be expressed when there is more identity, not when there's less. However, if the relationship's yisod, if it's shoresh, if it's mocker, is not a complete and absolute merging of personality and a total giving up of yourself, which is only possible as a child, where there isn't that much a sense of self and separateness that you just can't let go. As a child, the child can let go. He can give himself over completely to someone else. If you don't have that, you will never have the shleimistika relationship ultimate. Of course it has to go beyond that, because that itself will never suffice. That itself leads to its own breakdown, because it's first of all an insufficient personality that's dedicating themselves, and second of all it creates tremendous insecurities. But if it doesn't incorporate that in itself, then in the end it's always going to be selfish. Ultimately, the relationship has to be the relationship of one who is able to give himself over completely and subsequently learned what it means to feel themselves and to understand themselves and still maintain a relationship despite it. So that no matter how far away we go, in a sense, how separate we become, like we do on Purim, this is why we have an immediate smichas gula l'geula, that when we come to Purim, we find a time. It's a harsh time, Purim. It's a very geschmacka time. But you feel in a way, so you have to work. You're so alone. You have to be so independent. You have to be so strong. You have to really keep working on yourself to make sure that you don't fall back into this trap and into that trap. And everything has to be worked out and be clear that you're not lying to yourself. You're not lying to the people that you're relating to and so on. That you'd like to have a feeling, a geschmack of just sort of relaxing and being taken care of and giving yourself over completely to nice geschmack of simple mitzvahs and feeling the pashtus of a Seder and a Pesach. And those are almost the feelings that you get on a Pesach. So the warmth of being cared for. And without that, the relationship that you attained on Purim is meaningless. Because ultimately it must be separation, not relationship. So if the sheirish of it is Zacharti lo chesed yurayet, if the sheirish of it is that you can get back to HaKadosh, that you were once so involved with HaKadosh Baruch Hu that there was no thought, you didn't care where you were going to eat from and how you were going to cross a yam, and you just knew that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to take care of you and you were involved with him on that level, so then you can have also a Purim with a tremendous sense of self and separateness. But if you don't have that, then there's no Purim either. There's nothing. So it comes out that the Sheresh, the source of all of our ability to have relationship in all of our vast future, with all of the thousands of years of historical change and development and complexity that come to Klal Yisrael, is based on the fact that we're able to survive all of that as dedicated members of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's family. Because at one time we were able to say, we're yours. We know it's going to be great. And we gave ourselves over, and it was on that basis that our relationship began. So Mamela, it comes out that Pesach, we said before that Pesach is the time where you must constantly access these same things in order to have Cheres. Now it becomes more than that. It's that Pesach must be constantly accessed in order to have das, that is to say, to have a relationship at all. Das also means relationship. In order to have a shaykhus to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you must be able to access Pesach. And therefore, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to give over to Torah, he comes with the Luchas, what does he say to Klal Yisrael? Atem Rishim Esasheros Sisi L'Mitzrayim. Did you see what I did to Mitzrayim? What did I do to Mitzrayim? Rashi points out, Harve Yechisu L'Fonach. They've done terrible things all the years. Did I ever punish them? What do I care what they do? But the moment that they started up with you, that's the moment that I kill them. Because you're what I care about, not how they're acting. It's my concern for you that is central and essential to the whole union of our relationship in Yetzias Mitzrayim. And therefore, the first thing that appears in the Torah, Sanoichi Hashem Elokeach Asher Hotzeiicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim, that I am HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that you know me as someone who is relating to you personally and who cares about you and who loves you. And that's what this Yetzias Mitzrayim is all about. It's not stam that I punish people for doing wrong, and some of the Egyptians deserve to be punished because they treated another people. I don't care what they do wrong. It doesn't interest me. It's that B'nai B'chori Yisrael. It's mine. They touched my child. I care about you. I picked you up as a little infant and I took care of you and I raised you and I turned you into a princess. That's why, right away at the beginning of the Haggadah, we immediately go into the question of L'man Tizkor, Yom Tzeitzchem Yeretz Yisrael, Kol Yimei Chayecha. That Zechira is again at all times because it's accessing that level of Shaychus that is required not only for our freedom, but for our shaykhs to Hashem. And this is why that the mimer is said by Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, Bedavkut Arayani Keben Shivim Shana. Because the Nekud of Arayani Keben Shivim Shana is that I'm 70 years old and I'm still a child. I'm a child and I have the mimer of said. In other words, my das is not affected. But I have talk of the love and the relationship of a child, a teenager, and at the same time, I'm Arayani Keben Shivim Shana. It's mimer is beautiful. So that's exactly the point to say that you have to always remember, say Yom Tzeitzmir to try Yom Valayla Yom Mashiach. It's always Nogea. You're so much more sophisticated. You've gone so far beyond that. Never. That's the sherish of it all. Mamish half of the kud. Huh? Yeah, Shivim Shon is Das also because that's Seid is Shivim. We could break here if you want, or we could go weiter. In other words, I have break listed. No break. Okay. Right. Now, it's more than just accessing Pesach as being a way in which we can have a relationship. It's much more. Because here's a very funny thing. We take a look, and we go to the Ben HaChocham. I'll bet you all think that that's talking about a boy sitting at a Seder and asking questions about the Seder. Is that sure what the Haggadah makes it sound like? The truth is, it has absolutely nothing to do with that. He's not sitting at the Seder. He's living in Eretz Yisrael, working on a farm. So he sees we've got this whole society going over here. They're keeping these weird laws. They're not taking care of their land at certain times. They can't do this, and they have to do that. And he asks, why? What is it all for? Why are we doing this? What should you tell him? Tell him. Avadim ayinu lefarav b'mitzrayim. He didn't ask you that. He asked you why we're keeping all of these laws. Hold on. He did terrible things to them. He took us out of there. Why? Of course. Took us out in order to give us the land that he had promised. And he commanded us to do all of this. Lirah is Hashem Elokeinu, to have Yirah from Him. L'tov lanu kol hayomim, so it should be good for us all the time. L'chayosenu kayom hazeh, to give us life like we have today. U'tzedokah tiyah lanu, it'll be a schus for us. Ki nishmor la'atzos es kol ha'mitzvah azos lifnei Hashem Elokeinu kasher tzivah. So what do you see? You see that he's telling the child, you want to know why we keep the Torah and the mitzvahs? I'll tell you why. Because We were once in a state where we had nothing. And now you see we have everything. Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, and he gave us everything. So Mamela, what is your concern? I mean, obviously, the interest here is us. He's involved in us. So let's do it. L'tov lano. It's good for us. You see, we have everything we need. This is why we have everything we need. So the Yetzias Mitzrayim itself needs to be accessed, not only in terms of our relationship, but our relationship as it's expressed in the Kiyum HaMitzvahs. That is to say that there is no sense in Kiyum HaMitzvahs or that which results from Kiyum HaMitzvahs without constantly remembering of, you know, the problem is Mitzrayim, Yotzi Enor.